from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Texans back at it today. Practice in a couple of hours. The Rams coming to town. They joint practice tomorrow, so that'll be fun. The only joint practice of this preseason. So looks like it's going to come off. This time last year, they were busy canceling joint practices.
That's right,
with the Saints.
Because of all the injuries.
They're so banged up, yeah. And they've got... I mean, they've got a handful of guys that are dealing with bumps and bruises. I guess the most concerning one is Christian Harris, because it seems like everybody else that's on the list of guys every day that are not practicing or at least working out on the field next to the practice.
Yeah.
Whereas Christian Harris has rarely been out there at all.
He's rarely been out there. I guess Will Anderson is the other concern, just because now it's another ankle injury, and you wonder, okay, I really hope this doesn't become some kind of chronic deal.
Correct.
If he has just naturally floppy ankles.
Yeah. Yeah. Shin angle and all that
yeah.
good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Game is at noon on Saturday against the Rams. A lot of guys vying for or trying to survive here in
right.
the NFL.
Right. And the Rams don't traditionally play their starters much in the preseason, the third preseason game especially. I'm curious what they'll do.
I can't imagine the Texans are going to play theirs.
I wish they would start. I wish the offensive line would.
Yeah.
They need to have some success. You know, D'Amico had to venture into coach speak the other day when he talked about the running game, and he was saying that he doesn't want to draw any judgments off of just two runs.
Yeah, talking about the first string guys.
Well, the first string guys were actually in there for four runs, and not a single one of them looked good. Damian Pierce didn't make the right decision quickly enough a couple times, but the blocking was not good. Not just with the offensive line, it was the whole committee. I think there was at least one. There was one play where it was either a wide receiver or Cade Stover that made the wrong decision, and I think it was a wide receiver that left the defensive back unblocked. Fullback whiffed completely and totally, didn't touch a single soul on one play. Linebackers were running free. It was ugly. It was bad blocking. And this is not a team that was running the ball well last year. I would like to see. I feel like, listen, dude, if you guys want to be lead pipe carrying mofos, then get out there and do it. Do it versus the Rams backups.
At what point do we start to point to the coaching of the offensive line?
I'll do it right now. Yeah. I just like Bobby Slowick hasn't yet proven that he can put together. Or Chris Strauss,
who I'm talking about, yeah.
But I would go with Bobby Slowick as the offensive coordinator. He was the passing game coordinator in San Francisco. Yeah. He hasn't yet demonstrated, whether it's his fault or not, he hasn't yet demonstrated that he can put together a good rushing attack. So there's a lot of stuff I saw in that game that Joe Mixon wouldn't fix. Joe Mixon would have looked better. There are a couple plays where Joe Mixon, I think, like when they were backed up in the end zone, I think Joe Mixon would have taken a better line than Damian Pierce did. There was another shotgun run that I think Mixon would have done a better job of. But there's just way too much bad blocking out there for the starters. Like, I don't watch that game and think, like, oh, yeah, no reason to put him out there in harm's way in a third preseason game. They got to play the Colts. The next game after this is the Colts. And they got to, yeah.
Who, according to ESPN's rankings that we're about to dive into right now, Mike Clay is the writer for ESPN. He does this every year. He does the positional rankings 1 through 32 of every position group in the NFL. Quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end, O-line on the offensive side. And on the defensive side, he does interior D-line, edge, off-ball linebackers, corners, and safeties.
Yeah.
So you got 10 positions, and then he ranks the overall roster. The Texans' overall roster ranks 11th, according to Mike Clay, which sounds about right. I feel like they're getting discussed like a team whose roster is more like 5th or 6th, but that's probably because of C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
You know, the quarterback tends to skew the overall impressions of a team and maybe raise the level of what people feel about a team beyond what the actual talent level or production level is. But Indianapolis has the best interior defensive line according to these rankings, mm-hmm. to your point. So that's, yeah, as of right now, that's problematic. Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green have shown some good things this camp, but it's an overall effort with all five guys, add in the fullback, add in everybody else.
Yeah.
These rankings, this is what I wanted to touch on first, because they're fine at quarterback. They're rated 8th at quarterback. Their receiver room is the best in the league. They're going to be able to zip the ball all over the place. Their offensive line is rated 28th on this.
Mm-hmm.
Their defensive line, interior, is rated 29th on this.
Yeah, I'm not as worried about the defensive line interior. I think part of it, the same way Sheldon Rankins and Malik Collins, even when you look at PFF last year and other things, I feel like people weren't accounting for the scheme. And there's certain things that might look like a defensive tackle isn't doing a good job versus the run in this scheme, where it's actually okay, because they're gonna get washed out or hit out of their gap sometimes because they're just jetting upfield. That's when it's on the linebackers to fill in behind them. And I think that Foley Fatukasi and Mario Edwards are gonna be just fine in that regard. With the offensive line, part of it is, okay, people are, you know, Kenyon Green hasn't played well historically, but I do think he's a different guy right now. Juice Scruggs is a complete and total unknown right now. And they're going to take their lumps early. And unfortunately, they face, either unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how it works out, they're going to face Grover Stewart and DeForest Buckner in that first game, who are both studs.
Yep.
Like big physical dudes that know what the hell they're doing. If they didn't play for the Colts, they'd be one of my favorite defensive line duos.
Yeah.
But now I despise them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, so as far as blaming Chris Strausser or Bobby Slowick, there's some things that they do that I can't tell if it's the way the offensive line is being coached and this is their strategy, but there's times where guys aren't all executing. It doesn't look like they're all executing the same scheme. So somebody's off the page, like everybody's zone, outside zone blocking except for one offensive lineman. And there's some things that might be explained with scheme there, or it might be that guys are making mental errors.
Yeah.
So I just don't know. Some of the young guys have really sloppy footwork, and it really comes back to bite them. But they're young, so I can't put that on Chris Strausser just yet.
Can you get to a Super Bowl with the 28th best offensive line and 29th best interior defensive line?
I feel like that ranking is unfair, partly because I think they're going to be just fine in pass protection.
Yep.
Like, this is an ongoing...
28th felt really low.
Yeah, this is an ongoing theme with the Texans for whatever reason, in good years and bad, where the pass blocking has been way better than the run blocking. So I'm not overly concerned about the pass protection. I thought the young guys had some really good shots of pass protecting versus good defensive linemen in that game the other night. You know, Blake Fisher's still a work in progress. He had some really good reps. He also got spun moved to hell on one play by Brian Burns.
He did.
So, no, I think that ranking's too low. I think if you factor in both the run and the pass, they're probably middle of the road right now. Yeah.
Because I think there's other positions. Like, they're 19th at running back. I think you can get to a Super Bowl having the 19th best running back room. The last five Super Bowl winners have all had running back rooms that probably ranked it. Isaiah Pacheco's been winning you Super Bowls lately. You know?
And I think that's also, it's probably a matter of depth more so than anything else.
Yeah.
I think Joe Mixon, people aren't overly impressed by that acquisition by the Texans, but he's much more solid and dependable. Potential for perhaps being in a new scheme with a different quarterback might give him a little bit of extra boost, but it's who do you have behind him? Like, realistically, we got to take our blinders off a little bit here. We as a fan base are getting excited about a guy who's coming off of his second Achilles tendon tear in Cam Akers.
Cam Akers, yeah.
Who wasn't that good after his first Achilles tendon tear.
That's
so
right.
He showed all of those bursts of athleticism that we've seen. He showed them when he was in Minnesota last year. but he still averaged 3.4 yards per carry.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that it does turn out, and man, they can really capture something with him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all unproven people or Dameon Pierce, who hasn't been good since really before the last few games that he played in 2022. Because he was getting thumped around. He was putting out some pretty pedestrian performances the last few games before he
towards
got
the end.
Yeah.
In his rookie year. Yeah. Man, there was a video online. I'll get to it later. But there's a video that surfaced of all of Damian's good runs from his rookie year.
Yeah, I've watched them a lot.
It made me sad.
It was the Jaguars one, I think, that you had sent me. Wasn't
it? This was a cut-up of like 20 of them.
Yeah.
It made me sad. So anyways, we'll get to that later. In this ranking on ESPN, this positional group ranking, the things that are not surprising, Texans 8th at quarterback. That's about right, I think, for CJ coming off his rookie year. I know a lot of Texan fans would be like, he should be 5th, he should be 4th. It's the whole room, for one thing. Wide receiver, they're 1st, no surprise there, which sounds weird to say for a Texans team, that they're 1st among wide receiver rooms. And then the edge rushing room is 4th. Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, top 5. That feels about right. I guess the thing that would be concerning for the Texans, and where if you're buying into these rankings being somewhat accurate, Seth, is that literally every other position group is outside the top 15.
Yeah.
You know, everything else is hovering around the middle of the road or in the bottom part of the league. Running back, I mentioned 19th. Tight end, 16th. I mentioned the O-line and D-line, 28th and 29th. That's the most concerning thing, although I'm with you. I think they got shortchanged there. Linebackers, 21st. Man, if Christian Harris doesn't get healthy, 21st might be generous right now with that linebacker.
Yeah, I think there's a few of these that are, which just happens this time of year. I think some of it's based maybe a little too heavily on last year's team.
Mike Clay is not at every training camp.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know. Like, I was surprised that the linebackers were ranked as low as they were. Part of that, I think, is that if you're looking at the team's base defense, then okay, it's a 4-3. You're looking at the Sam linebacker. Henry Toa didn't play really well last year, so there's no reason for anybody outside of Houston to think. But I think Henry Toa has made a lot of progress.
He's had a good camp, yeah.
But yeah. I think Christian Harris is another guy that if you look at his season in totality last year, it's not that impressive. People that didn't watch the Texans every week don't realize that Christian Harris was a completely different player in the second half of the season. He doubled his production in a lot of regards. Like actually doubled it in terms of TFLs, total tackles, all of that. He was a much different player in the second half of the season, so I think they're ranked too low there.
If Henry Toa has to play 50 snaps in the opener against the Colts, how are you feeling about
that? Because they don't, they're just not in that. My point about the 4-3 was that they don't play the actual 4-3 all that much.
I guess let me clarify.
I'm nervous.
Yeah.
It's much different. Right. And we'll see. I'm optimistic that he's an improved player.
Yep.
Athletically, he's just not nearly the same thing as Christian Harris.
Right.
That's a we'll see. I thought cornerbacks being ranked 18th, that's an interesting one because, again, I think they're looking at Kamari Lassiter as an unproven commodity. I'm pretty bullish on Kamari Lassiter.
Me too.
So I think that right now they should be, the way I expect Kamari Lassiter to play, ranked higher than that. But then there's also the conundrum of, all right, we saw some of those backup cornerbacks like Mike Ford, who let up a huge reception downfield for Daniel Jones in that game. Mike Ford has had a rough training camp. I mean, he's out there playing in the second quarter after the starters go out. So depth at cornerback is not as deep as I would like it to be.
Yeah, I think that if there's positions on this team where I feel like the 53 they take into the season, where the guys are on other teams right now at these positions, I feel like cornerback, depth at cornerback and depth on the offensive line are two of them for me.
Yeah.
Where I feel like ultimately the 53 that they settle on heading into the Colts game in week one, that those guys are on somebody else's squad right now.
I think too, Sean, I think where it's valid that there's been a lot of commotion about the Texans based on the improvement last year and then the roster as it's currently constructed is that the positions that matter the most are any position that involves the quarterback on offense or defense. So if you look at the wide receivers, you look at the edge rushers, you look at the quarterback himself, and then you look at the starting cornerbacks, Those I feel really, really good about. And beyond that, you gotta have a broad roster of blue-collar dudes that are good players,
yeah,
and solid players. So if you go position group by position group, it can kind of give you a misleading the thought of just how strong a team actually can be.
Yeah, you're right. Like, those positions, the one you're talking about, should be weighted.
Those are the positions that are the highest paid positions in the league.
Yeah.
Because they're the most important. They have the biggest impact in the game. In the positions where they have the biggest impact in the game, I feel really good about all those.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why for, you know, when you got 10 position groups in this exercise that Mike Clay is doing here on ESPN, and seven of them, you're 15th or lower,
yeah,
but your roster is still 11th, I think is reflective of that.
Well, like, and I would include the offensive tackles in that, too.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I would throw Laramie into that pot you were just talking about.
Yeah, because they're the other one of the highest paid position groups, because it's about protecting the quarterback.
Absolutely.
At that spot. So Laramie, in pass protection more so in the run game, is really good. But some of the issues that we saw in the game on last week, the preseason game, I'm optimistic about Blake Fisher. I think he's making really good progress, but as a run blocker, Laramie Tunsil is still much better than him.
Yep.
And just in terms of understanding, sometimes just like the simplest and easiest way. You see with young players, this is universal across sports, so much wasted movement, you know, and they get in their own way sometimes by just hyper-reacting or overreacting to one thing, so then they can't react to a counter. That's a little bit where Blake Fisher and some of the young offensive linemen are right now. They're just taking steps that are too big.
Yeah.
The veterans know economy of motion is really helpful. And you take you're just taking the smallest necessary step. And that's something that Laramie does really well. Even in the run game, even though he's not a road grader, but there are some of these whiffs in mental errors you're not going to see with him.
It's an interesting question just based on the conversation we're having. Seth and I are talking, if you're just getting in your car, ESPN ranked all the positional groups in the NFL 1 through 32, and the Texans are faring really well at a few of them, quarterback, receiver, edge rusher, and then they're kind of middle of the pack or even bottom of the league in the other seven. Overall roster, 11th. Random question, text page, is this team's roster better than, and I'm assuming they just mean talent-wise, better than the two Texans teams in 2011 and 2012 that first made the playoffs?
The total roster, I'm going to say, I'll say the same thing that Andre Johnson had said. And just I felt like in those really competitive teams and on some of Bill O'Brien's competitive teams, they were very top-heavy. I think this is maybe, I think it's as talented at top-level talent, especially if you include the quarterback position. I think most people would agree. I think Matt Schaub would agree that C.J. Stroud's ceiling is higher than ceiling was.
Yeah.
So I would say they are more talented at the top end and much deeper throughout. So, yeah, I think on paper right now, as we sit here in August, where everything has been meaningless, I think they've got the potential to be a better overall roster than those teams.
It's funny. They're kind of like a bizarro version. In this exercise, if you're rating all the position groups, they're not a perfect flip bizarro version of each other, but like the 2011 Texans, I think Matt Schaub in this exercise is probably like a, you know, like 12 to 14 or 15 quarterback, whereas CJ's eighth. Running back, they're probably near the top of the league with Arian Foster.
Right, like
offensive line,
yeah.
Offensive line, that was a top five offensive line. They're 28th in this exercise. That was the interior defensive line was, depending on how you categorize JJ Watt, you know, like it was, they ran a 3-4. You know, so depending on how you categorize a 3-4 defense in this exercise, are your edge guys really more like the Connor Barwins of the world or Brooks Reed?
Well, right, yeah.
Opposed to JJ?
Well, and JJ was just, JJ for the duration of the season was a rookie that was showing promise but not necessarily doing a whole lot.
And in 11, end, yeah, yeah.
He kicked it in.
Yeah.
But if you look at, okay, as an edge rusher, Brooks Reed or Connor Barwin versus Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter.
Right.
I think they've got about, like, Connor was very good as a versatile 3-4 outside linebacker, where good pass rusher, could actually be relied upon in coverage way more than most outside linebackers, but he wasn't the menacing pass rusher that Danielle Hunter is. I would take Will Anderson over Brooks Reed. So
yes,
I think,
yeah,
I think that, again, when you get to the marquee positions, the 2000, this squad right here is better. And then I do think, just by virtue of maybe special teams play, you can see the depth of the roster. And they've done a good job. Nick's done a good job with that over the last few years, mm-hmm, of getting a pretty deep roster in terms of having guys that are capable of playing special teams.
Yeah. Let's relive some of the magic from Saturday real quick, because I've got an observation on the Texans and the effect they're having on their opponents here in the preseason. Let's relive the magic of Jalen Petrie getting a pick six.
Jones fakes the give on second and eight. Pumps, and he's going to be sacked. No, he gets rid of it last moment. It's picked off for a touchdown.
There's your
Jalen
guy.
Jalen Petrie to the end zone. Pick six, short range.
There's your guy. Vandy must have been talking up Petrie before the game.
Yeah.
And then we had this just a series or two later.
Jones in the gun. He's got time, and he airs it out deep down the right side, and Stingley has a pick inside the five-yard line. Derek Stingley Jr. with the interception. There was no way he was going to be denied the pass intended for Jalen Hyatt.
That catch, that's still...
It was one of those things where you got to credit Daniel Jones partly for it, you know?
Put it right on the nose.
And yet it was still an impressive feat pulling it off.
The hands catch aspect to it, it was away from Stingley's body and not intended for him.
Daniel Jones was like, I felt like he was maybe he was kind of just fixated on Derek Stingley's hazel eyes or something.
He's
like,
always fixated on something.
He'll throw him a pick six in the drive, too. Yeah.
So
it was both a bad pass, but also a brilliant interception.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
So you and I had talked before the Pittsburgh game. You'd brought this up several times about how it's going to be cool to watch the Texans have an impact on one of the more interesting quarterback battles in the NFL, right? Like, and we didn't see Russell Wilson in that game. We only saw Justin Fields for like a quarter and a half, and Fields did a couple good things. Pittsburgh people got all hot and bothered and up and really hyped about some of the completions that he had.
There were Pittsburgh people that were optimistic about that performance.
Well, just some of the articles you sent me.
Oh, maybe the writers. I bet Steelers fans.
The smart ones were not, probably. Yeah. But this just in, every fan base has dumb fans. It actually may be this quarterback room in New York that the Texans, in the short term at least, have had a bigger impact on in terms of the impressions. This is Emmanuel Acho of FS1 yesterday. I'm not a huge Acho guy, but I loved this analogy about Daniel Jones. And again, this is all on the heels of the Texans making him look like he looked his first couple years in the league this weekend. This is a fantastic analogy, basically calling Daniel Jones a zero.
How can you start Daniel Jones? You are betraying your running back, your tackles, your guards, your receivers, your defensive linemen, your outside backers, your defensive ends, your cornerbacks, your safeties, your inside backers. You are betraying the entire organization when you make Daniel Jones the starter, because all of their work is void by starting Daniel Jones. That's like adding all of the numbers into a calculator and then hitting times zero. You will end up at zero. So it does not matter how much you keep hitting plus neighbors, plus Thomas, plus Dexter Lawrence, plus Okereke. It doesn't matter how many times you continue to hit plus, because at the end of the day, you have to hit times Daniel Jones, and that will equal zero.
You know what?
That's really good.
I like that because, you know, you hear sometimes about people being like, well, they're force multipliers. A guy that, a player that makes everybody else around him, he's a force multiplier.
Yeah.
You can use that same term and say, yeah, he's a force multiplier. Yeah. You're multiplying by zero.
Right?
Daniel Jones is a force multiplier.
Yes.
What's the factor? Zero.
Zero. The factor. That's the word I couldn't think of. That's the word I couldn't think of.
Text line, tell me if I was right or not. I can't remember.
I was just going to say integer.
I stopped helping my kid with math about like fourth grade. I was like, I don't remember any of this crap. That was
I know.
Once I had algebra, like, y'all's do this differently these days.
Dude,
I don't know.
Trig?
Yeah.
Calculus? Do I use this stuff?
So, yeah, he's a force factor of zero.
Yeah.
Even in, well, because it doesn't just affect the quarterback itself, it affects the GM.
Right.
And every Joe Shane, the GM, I heard him making some argument about why they had to give him that contract because, hey, quarterback salaries keep rising. And if you look at him now, it's only like the 15th highest paid quarterback. Right. But, like, so you're still paying for a viable NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Sean, it's a triumph when this guy gets more than 12 touchdown passes in a season.
Yeah, I know.
It's incredible. I'm watching Malik Nabers in that game, who had some nice catches after that initial drop because he was terrified of Jimmy Ward.
Yep.
And I'm just thinking, I wasn't even saying this as a joke. He might be good enough to prop up Daniel Jones for another couple seasons. And they're going to go through the same old thing. Like, because it's not just giving Daniel Jones the contract. It's them then spending the entire offseason on HBO talking about how they can't possibly keep a 27-year-old running back because we got to find out what we have in Daniel Jones. That dude made Daniel Jones.
No, that's
the only time you guys were competitive was when Daniel Jones was feeling just right and had some big games. When Saquon Barkley was feeling just right.
Brian Daboll screwed himself by coaching Daniel Jones up that first year and winning Coach of the Year with the Giants.
In a year where they were supposed to, the best thing for the Giants would have been if they sucked.
If they sucked, they would have had Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, or Anthony Richardson, one of the three. And you're better off with any of them right now than you are with even Bryce Young. You're better off with Daniel Jones just because, A, he can, you know, there's evidence that he's a better passer than Daniel Jones to some degree. Whatever. But at least there's upside with him.
Right.
Like, Daniel Jones just is who he is at this
point.
He
is who he is.
Yeah.
Man. But how long... This has a Texans tie-in. How long do we give Brian Daboll his new persona to last? Remember Bill O'Brien would come in, and it seemed like every training
every
camp,
year.
Like, this is a kinder, gentler Bill O'Brien.
Every year!
And then by about the third week of training camp, O'Brien would be over there with his face all red, fuming, about to punch an equipment guy or something. Daboll, by all accounts, has been much more
kinder,
calm and
gentler.
Calculating. He's lost a bunch of weight. He looks good.
He has lost weight.
Kind of a little blue-collar sexiness to him right now.
He looks
different.
No, he definitely looks different.
Women being like, there's a man that knows how to use his hands. He's got to put some grease on his forearms, and that does it for me.
That's right.
Yeah.
Get this man some heavy machinery.
Mm-hmm.
The pictures they put up of him early on in the offseason saying, boy, he and his wife, too.
Yeah.
Like, they both, you know, sometimes you got to do it together, like keep each other accountable.
Hard, yeah.
And the pictures they put up, like the before and afters of them, I was like, okay, damn, the wife looks good.
Oh, really?
Like, Daboll kind of looks like, yeah, I can tell he lost weight, but he still looks like a heavy, like he still looks heavy. Like, if I saw him on the street, I wouldn't say, damn, that guy's in great shape. That game on Saturday, though, I thought he looked good, man. Like,
yeah.
He looks like he's in good shape. He's
probably continuing to lose weight.
No, but he's maybe it's like a comedian where like some comedian, like Jonah Hill,
yeah.
is just funnier when he's fat
uh-huh.
than when he's skinny. Maybe Daboll is just a better coach when he's fat than when he's skinny.
Hmm.
You know?
That's true, yeah, because he's just not so focused on himself.
Yes.
He's just shoveling whatever into the old pie hole there while his brain is... And he's got extra glucose in his system to think of the X's and O's and everything.
That's
you
right.
know? He's at a carbohydrate deficit right now.
That's it.
You got to find the right balance.
Yeah.
Lowering your carbs is a great idea, but you do get to a point where it turns you dumb. But you're reading so much online propaganda about how the ketones are just as good. Not for everybody, man. Not for everybody. Everybody's got to find their own balance.
Factor was an accurate use of the terminology,
oh,
according to
yeah.
the text page.
Hell yeah.
Good job, nerd.
I remember stuff.
Way to go, Brainiac.
The easiest thing that fourth graders all
yeah.
know, yeah.
Good Seth Hunting over here, yes. All right. One more on Daniel Jones. Here's Dan Orlovsky on Daniel
Jones. Anyone who's heard me ever talk about Daniel, that's the sticking point for me. In those moments of panic with the ball, what you do with that decision is really the determining factor on, like, are you going to be good, really good, great, or subpar? And the Giants, the one season that Daniel Jones played really good football was 2 years ago. And that's the one thing he got rid of. And that right there has to be concerning to Brian Daboll. It has mm-hmm. to be concerning because the highs don't mistake cover up for it. Daniel Jones hasn't thrown three touchdowns in a game since 2019. He hasn't thrown for three touchdown passes in a game since 2019. So if he was lighting the scoreboard up, different conversation. But to have that show its rear its ugly head, that's got to be an issue. That's got to be concerning.
Good job, Texans.
Yeah.
Good job. You ruined Daniel Jones. You ruined the Giants.
So they ruined... They definitely didn't make... The Texans at least kept doubt in people's minds about who the quarterback should be in Pittsburgh.
I agree with that.
With the Justin Fields deal.
Yep.
I mean, for one, it's... couldn't take a snap under center. That was one issue that
Twice.
Justin Fields
yeah.
had with, in an
yeah.
offense where they really wanted the QB to be under center a
yep.
lot.
Yep.
So they injected doubt there. They might have started to tap in the first nail in the coffin for Daniel Jones.
I think they did.
In his career.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Daniel Jones and whatever their other options are.
Well, that's the other thing with Acho's take from a few minutes ago, Emmanuel Acho, saying that you're doing basically everybody else, the other 52 guys, a disservice by starting Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
His backup is Tommy DeVito. What the hell's that?
Right.
You know, like...
Yeah, beloved. Why?
Yeah.
He's Italian. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's not even...
You're only voting for him because he's Italian.
He's yeah. not even interesting either. He's doing these videos where he's sitting down with, like, Italian chefs in New York.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's got the personality of a mashed potato. He's like...
Ooh. I want a stereotypical Italian.
Hell
New Jersey
yeah.
Italian,
hell,
damn it.
I almost cursed.
Come on.
Yes, I do.
Amp it up a little bit.
If your name's Tommy DeVito, I better feel like you might whack me if I'm in the same room.
He's got to be Tom DeVito until he shows reason otherwise.
I don't know, Tommy. They like using. They like.
I know yeah. it's an Italian
oh,
thing.
I see
I'm
what
saying.
You're saying
he's Tom or Thomas.
I thought
DeVito.
You meant to make him more Italian.
No, to de-Italianize him.
You're right. He doesn't deserve the extra syllable on his first name.
Right.
He's just Thomas.
What's your favorite pizza, Tommy DeVito? Domino's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Little
What's
Caesars.
Your favorite pizza shop? I like the Domino's at the mall.
Sabaro. All right, so I'm going to save Tua for the next segment.
They need Tommy DeVito in that Michael Scott meme where he's,
oh, yeah.
where he's standing in front of Sabaro.
New York
going
slice.
To go get some authentic New York slice.
My
yeah.
favorite spot for a New York slice is Sabaro. I guess the Bengals and the Colts have been practicing with each other this week.
Yes.
And I guess the Bengals were talking all sorts of trash. This is important for the Texans because
yeah.
the Texans play the Colts in week one.
And the Colts had a combined practice with the Bengals yesterday, and the Colts will play their starters tomorrow night. So you get some primetime Colts action. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, well, you'd see Anthony Richardson, right? If they're going
right.
to play their starters. I guess this is according to Olivia Ray, who covers the Bengals. She said the Bengals defense is running their mouth after a dominant day versus the Colts starters. Now, granted, this is through a lens of a Bengals person watching this. Cam Taylor-Britt after an Anthony Richardson scramble, that's all he do is run. B.J. Hill, throw the damn ball. Geno Stone after a Richardson incompletion. He only throws to spots. He don't throw to receivers.
Yeah.
That's good trash talk.
That is, right, honestly. There. I haven't watched Anthony Richardson's second preseason game. The first preseason game, I thought there were some stuff on TV that, or like the TV highlights that made it look worse than it was, but he did show a lot of the signs of being a young quarterback in some of his decisions in that game. So I didn't see anything that made me scared. Now, with the one Bengals player saying all he do is run, that doesn't help me feel any better because, yeah, that was enough.
That's all he did against the Texans.
That's all he had to do in the first quarter versus the Texans to basically put that game out of reach. He ran and ran and ran, untouched. Yeah. Although they did, who's the defensive back that knocked him, gave him the concussion on the goal line?
Oh, who was that? I got to go look that up.
He ran untouched until he was crossing the goal line.
Yeah.
And that's where he got his concussion. He went back out and played a little bit
was
after
it Jimmy
that.
Jimmy Ward
was out of the game.
I want to say it might have been that old DHC character, that DeAndre Houston Carson.
Yeah, whoever it was. Don't worry. Let's not.
I'm going to look it up. Yeah, I'm going to look it up, though. Whatever happened to Justin Britt, somebody texted in.
Nobody knows. The last we heard of Justin Britt was Lovie Smith. I remember this. I was mowing the lawn. I was listening to the press conference, and Lovie Smith said, I'll let you guys know by this afternoon what happened to Justin
We're
Britt.
Still
and
waiting.
Nobody ever heard from him again.
He didn't say which afternoon. This afternoon, yeah.
I don't know if Jack Easterby has been implicated in his disappearance yet or not. I can't remember whether Jack Easterby himself had been fired by that point in the season, but nobody knows what happened to Justin Britt.
He had not.
Now, I haven't Googled it or anything.
Yeah.
He might own a woodworking. He seems like a guy that would own like a woodworking shop or something.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, you know what I could see him being? A shipwright. He would, and I was out
you
visiting,
could, huh?
I was out visiting my friend in Seattle, Farragher.
Yeah.
And, he was sitting, we were sitting up on this, fire pit they had overlooking one of the, it was either Puget Sound or one of the water.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Farragher, man, he's doing all right.
He's doing good.
Yeah, huh? But, you know, sitting there next to a fire pit with Dave freaking Matthews and his wife.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That was that trip.
Overlooking the Sound. Yeah. I'm like, I might have to just start smoking a bunch of pot or something. This is, one of the guys that I was talking to was, I was like, so what do you do, man? He's like, I'm a shipbuilder. And I'm like, a shipbuilder? What? Did you respond to that build submarines ad that I see on Major League Baseball this year? And now he's been like, for the last 30 years of his life, he builds boats.
How
I don't
big?
Think he called himself a shipbuilder or whatever. Like yachts, I think.
Okay.
But he just builds them by hand. And he's got like a couple assistants and everything. Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's an industry out there in this town.
Well, they got a lot of water. I have such respect for people.
Way more than in Iowa.
Build things. Yeah. It's a good. If you're going to build ships, best to be not in a landlocked state. Good call.
So that's a guy that's, I think, kind of a blue collar.
You think Britt could go? And he used to play for the Seahawks too, so he could move right back.
Send him
there.
A line. I'm like, hey man, you always seem to me like a guy that would be into boat building.
A good shipwright.
Yeah, you should go do it. Yeah.
Yeah. We say all that to say we have no idea what happened to Justin Britt. Texter. Just Lovie Smith promised we'd hear something, and we're on day 714 of Brit Watch. We don't know where he is. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Tua Tagovailoa took big shots at Brian Flores. Literally called him a bad person. Brian Flores was asked about this yesterday. We'll judge how Brian Flores handled the news that he's a bad person, in one man's opinion. We've got that audio for you coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's reset, because the big story around the NFL the last 2 days has been the soap opera between Tua Tagovailoa and Brian Flores. Tua just took his missiles out and just aimed them right at Brian Flores, straight from Dan Lebatard's couch. Tua Tagovailoa had this to say about...
Creepy.
His former
Levitard had him shooting missiles
from his couch.
Yeah.
This was Tua Tagovailoa a couple days ago talking about his former head coach Brian Flores and what a drain he was on him.
To put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right, And then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate. You are the best whatever. You are this. You are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it. You hear it, regardless of what it is, the good or the bad. And you hear it more and more. You start to actually believe that. I don't care who you are. You can be the president of the United States. You have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear, or that you probably shouldn't be hearing. You're going to start to believe that about yourself. And so that's sort of like what ended up happening. And it was, I mean, it's basically been, what, 2 years of training that out of not just me, but, you know, a couple of the guys as well that have been here since my rookie year all the way till now.
Okay, so before we play Brian Flores' response, the one thing I was thinking about this yesterday, and I actually thought about that president analogy again, because it's a horrible analogy. Most presidents do not lack for self-confidence. Yeah. It's like, it's one of the prerequisites of the job is that you're going to take a lot of arrows.
Yeah.
Those dudes, when was the last president where you're like, if only he were more confident. Yeah. But I think that's a little instructive in terms of, like in any communication, there's the message and then there's the receiver. The messenger and the receiver. There's a person delivering that. And when you say the same thing to 10 different people, it's 10 different messages because they all hear it through their own filters.
Yeah.
And I do wonder exactly what Brian Flores was saying to Tua. And like specifically, I would love to know what he was saying, but then how Tua interpreted it.
Yeah.
Because Tua obviously interpreted it as told that I suck and I'm not here. Brian Flores could have said that to U.S. president, and I think a lot of presidents might have interpreted it differently. So I don't know specifically what Flores said, but it at the very least, I can say maybe Flores misgaged the situation or misgaged, unless he just genuinely did want to destroy his confidence and get out there or something. But I can't, like, this is, man, I saw all these people lambasting Flores before they even heard his side of anything. And it's just classically, he said, she said, all right, well, this is one dude's version. And by the way, most quarterbacks don't come out and dish like this, even after they've worked with. I do, like, I'm not trying to say Tua's soft or anything, but I think amongst 32 NFL quarterbacks, he might be the one who least needed the tough love approach.
Look at the way he was handling his contract situation.
Yeah.
Tua is, I think, and I know he played for Nick Saban, but I think there's a good chance that Nick Saban might have this gruff exterior with the media and on the right sidelines and things like that, and maybe handle things differently behind the scenes, and maybe even with Tua, offload that to Steve Sarkisian or whoever the OC was at the time. There's probably a lot more interaction with that person going on. Who knows? Flores, let's play Flores here. The one thing Flores is guilty of is not knowing what management style works with Tua.
Right,
I think
right.
we can all agree on that. Whatever he was saying to him, it clearly ruined Tua, who was a really important asset for that team, having used a top five pick on him. Here was Flores yesterday saying he wishes Tua the best.
I just want to say, look, I'm happy, genuinely happy, genuinely happy for the success that Tua's had. And I really wish him nothing but the best. And, you know, I think, you know, player relationships are very important to me. I think that's kind of the foundation of coaching. I mean, I got into coaching because, you know, I was impacted as a young guy by my high school coaches, my college coaches, my going all the way to Pop Warner. I got into coaching because, you know, I want to make that same kind of impact, positive impact, pour into young people, help them become, you know, as KO says all the time, the best versions of themselves. And, you know, that's really my goal always in coaching.
KO is Kevin O'Connell, the head coach of the Vikings, who he's talking about there.
It's and it's another classic thing again where, man, sometimes just different cultures are the wrong fit for different dudes. And I think Flores is in a culture of this Bill Parcells tree of, like, because I played in a Bill Parcells tree. And, yeah, there's a kind of a rough culture. It's kind of, man, it's brutal. It's brutal. Like, they want to see how tough you are and everything else like that. And you do, you're stressed out all the time because you're terrified of getting yelled at in films. It's Ted Johnson and I used to have therapy sessions about this together. It's a different culture, and some guys can handle it and some guys can't. I don't think, it doesn't mean that, Doesn't mean that one is better and one is worse. I do, like, having seen the way the other world operates, like the D'Amico Ryan's world and everything, I'm like, well, if given a choice, if both can succeed,
yeah.
I kind of see the appeal of the kinder, gentler side of it. But I don't, yeah, I don't, like, I can't stand here and act like Brian Flores was just an evil person because he hurt young tender Tua Tagovailoa's feelings.
I'm 100% with you on that. I thought clearly Brian Flores at the beginning of that cut we just played was pondering which direction he should go with his answer, because he, one thing he didn't do is deny that he said all those things to Tua.
I feel like he just, I thought
he probably seemed, felt like it was a no-win situation.
I thought he seemed genuinely contrite in terms of, this is the way
no,
I interpreted
I do too.
It. By his, I think, I interpreted it as maybe he also could have said, like, look, you know, I try to do this pour into guys and you know, I probably should have taken a different tact with Tua. Or I didn't read, you know, maybe I just I need to do a better job of seeing how it's affecting people or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't, it was, for me, it seemed like genuinely heartfelt enough that it wasn't just boilerplate. I'm going to say what I have to say about, like, I don't talk about situations or whatever. So I felt like it was a little bit more human than I expected.
It was way more human than I expected, because the picture, I don't, you know, I haven't watched a ton of Brian Flores up in front of the media before. Like, Tua's picture that he paints there in that 2 minutes he was talking about him is the most insight I've gotten into what Brian Flores is all about. And who's been following the Dolphins when Flores was the coach there? You know what I mean? And so I was expecting like a Belichick type response where he's just not going to address any. Like, he's going to get asked about this, take 10 seconds deflecting and saying, I'm thinking about the Seahawks or whoever we're playing in week 3 of the preseason coming up.
Yeah.
And he did do some of that at the end. Like, and we'll play, here's one more from Brian Flores. This is Brian Flores on Tua calling him a terrible person.
That hit me in a way that, you know, wasn't, I wouldn't say it was, you know, positive for me. But at the same time, you know, I've got to use that and say, hey, how can I grow from that? You know, how can I be better? And that's really where I'm at from that standpoint. Do I feel like, you know, that's me? No. But, you know, how can I grow from that situation and create a world where that's not, you know, the case that anyone says that about Brian Flores?
All right, so here's the thing too, Seth, about Brian Flores is that's getting lost in this, I think. He won games with the Dolphins. Like, his 2 seasons with Tua the building.
He overperformed.
He went 10-6 in Tua's rookie year, and he went 9-8 in Tua's second year. And that's where, if I were Brian Flores, if I thought to myself, man, because he clearly got fired because he couldn't get along with, they chose Tua over Flores, and you can tell by the guy they hired to replace Flores that was the issue.
There was questions whether,
McDaniel came in, and the first thing he's doing is FaceTiming with Tua from the plane.
Flores would contend that he got fired because he won too many games.
Maybe.
You know, because he was, the Flores side of that story was that the owner was actively encouraging him to lose games, and he refused.
That's right. I forgot about that. If I'm Brian Flores, maybe I'm looking back, like, okay, maybe if I had adapted my management style just a little bit. I mean, he went 10-6 and 9-8 with that dysfunctional environment that Tua's talking about.
Right,
they were above .500 both years.
Yeah, well, that's where it also gets into, like, okay, grading against how you think things should be versus sometimes in pro sports especially. You got to deal with what the resources that you have. And maybe Tua wasn't as tough as he wanted it to be or whatever. But you got to realize, but this is our guy.
I got to
figure out a way to get the most out of him.
Yeah. And he's not a left guard. He's the quarterback.
He's the face of the
franchise.
Your quarterbacks. And I think that the one thing you've seen out of guys like, okay, Saban and Belichick through their careers was that I think both those guys, and I'm not saying this lightly or anything, but at all, I'm not trying to say this in a light way, but they're I think, a little bit on the spectrum. You know, like, they're incredibly analytical and stuff, but earlier in their career, like, the human side of things, like, completely eluded them. And to their credit, they both had to work on it. I mean, Belichick hired consultants to help teach him to basically be better with people.
So he was aware of it.
Well, yeah, he was aware of it. You know, and I think that they had to figure it out, and they needed to learn how to soften some of their edges. And I think maybe Flores probably has to go through that transition too when it comes to being a head coach. But at the end of the day, there's a part I can't get over when it comes to Tua's side of it. It's he said, she said, and it's a quarterback who's doing something that active NFL quarterbacks almost never do that I can remember, which is dishing about interpersonal issues in an extreme way where they're like basically slinging arrows at another coach right now. And maybe that makes him courageous, or maybe it makes him a guy that's just more affected by it than other NFL quarterbacks.
Dude, and I know we need to get out here, but real quick, like, you won the war. You got your $53 million.
Yeah.
I could understand it more if the Dolphins were hemming and hawing about paying him, and he's trying to use some platform somewhere to say, like, hey, look, the reason I don't have the body of work that some of these other guys do, one, concussions, two, the first 2 years, it's taken me 2 years to get rid of the scars from the first 2 years.
Yeah.
You know? But you got paid, man. Like, just, man, go ass backwards into your pile of money.
Yeah, up next, John Elway tears into Dan Reeves.
Yeah, dude, you got your two Super Bowls. What are you doing? All right, Payne and Pendergast, we head into the 8 o'clock hour. Astros lose last night, but there is something I discovered this morning that I need to be a little bit more focused on when it comes to the Houston Astros. No, and I'm going to bring everybody along for the ride with me on this one, because I feel like there's people in the audience that may be suffering from the same thing.
Uh-oh.
We'll get to that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.